I'm really thrilled to have so many of you come out for the Rudin Lecture. I think you're in for a treat. I'm Ann Kenny, the Carl A. Kroc University Librarian, and it's a real pleasure to have our speaker here today. And I want to just make a few remarks before I turn it over to Deb. I am reminded to ask you if you have a cell phone, and it is on. Could you please silence it? So it's a little unusual for us to start our remarks by giving deep thanks, but it's truly appropriate, I think, in these circumstances. Three couples, Gail and Stephen Rudin, who are here with us, Beth and Stephen Lowenthal, and Stephen is here, and Stephen and Evelyn Edwards-Millman are making possible today's event and the exhibition, which showcases some of the country's earliest and most incredible items from the 50 years of photography in America. These generous people truly have enriched our library in extraordinary ways. Without their efforts, we wouldn't have a story to tell or a way to tell it. The Millmans have endowed the exhibition program. The Millmans have endowed the exhibition program in the Division of Rare and Manuscript Collections, which allows us to showcase incredible collections in the galleries of Kroc Library for everyone to see. And I hope you will be able to join us afterwards for the opening reception and a viewing of the exhibit. The Rudins have generously funded today's talk by Deborah Willis, as well as the opening reception that we'll enjoy downstairs. The Rudins' collections have also enriched the exhibition itself, including exceptional items such as an 1864 albumen print of Abraham Lincoln, created at Matthew Brady's gallery. It will look familiar as you see it because it's the same portrait that's on a penny. And we also have in the exhibit an original 1909 penny, also again with thanks from the Rudins. And there are also wonderful, interesting letters from Lewis Carroll and as well as Civil War soldiers that are from their holdings. Then we come to the Lowenthals. Stephen Lowenthal's love of the history of 19th century photography serves as the inspiration for this exhibit. The Lowenthals provided funding for Jenny Bagger, right there, the curator of the exhibition itself, which would not have happened without such generosity and foresight. The items that Stephen has collected over 30 years? I was going to say at birth. are just amazing, from a person who is self-described a fanatical collector, and they make up the majority of this exhibit and are themselves only a very small sampling of a much larger collection of more than 16,000 19th century photographs, which will be on their way to us here at Cornell very, very soon. When you think about mid-19th century technology that went into the creation of these images, there's an incredible story, and it's made even more powerful by the dynamic and complex relationship between the new medium, born in 1839, and the turbulent historic events that shaped this country. Just one small example of the way photography changed American history is revealed in the spectacular landscapes that make up part of Stephen's collection. One in particular, taken by William Henry Jackson, a 19th century renowned photographer, shows a geyser in Yellowstone National Park. It's beautiful, of course, and striking and very large, but our 21st century eyes have seen these images before. We're used to them. But imagine living in 1878 and seeing a photograph of this majestic geyser erupting from the ground thousands of miles from where you lived in a place that looks utterly unlike anything you'd ever seen before. It would feel completely alien. It would be a completely new vision to you. Imagine how that changed an ordinary citizen, and then how it might have affected, say, a member of Congress who was debating the legislation to create other national parks. Only two natural area national parks existed in 1886, Yellowstone and the Hot Springs Reservation in Arkansas. After photography took off in the United States, perhaps after members of Congress could see with their own eyes what the western part of our country looked like, the national parks more than doubled in number by the turn of the century, many of them situated in the west and comprehensible to politicians only through descriptions and the power of photography. A decade after that, as photography continued to advance, the country had more than 25 national parks. Could that correlation be a coincidence? I don't think so. The visual images in this collection document the history of America in a way no other format can. And they provide a wonderful complement to our extensive, rich textual holdings and further our understanding of the past. Indeed, I see this collection coming to Cornell as the library's gift to the university as it approaches its sesquicentennial. We're pleased to obtain this collection in toto, and I view it as revealing more about the milieu in which this truly first American university sprang. Returning to the thank yous for a moment, I want to express my gratitude again to our visiting curator and her family for coming. Jenny Baggert, whose passion and dedication are evident in every detail of the collection and the exhibit. Special thanks also to our exhibits coordinator, Aisha Prather, and of course to Catherine Reagan, the Ernest L. Stern Curator of Rare Books and Manuscripts, for both of them for their incredible hard work and their key roles in making this amazing collection available to the public. And now I'd like to introduce Deborah Willis. Dr. Willis is one of the nation's leading historians of African American photography and curator of African American culture. She's both a photographer in her own right and a scholar of the medium, actively showing her own photographs while working on various publications and books. Her work has taken her from the New York Public Library to the Smithsonian to a host of academic institutions. She was named among the 100 most important people in photography by American Photography Magazine, and she now serves as the chair of the Department of Photography and Imaging at the incredible Tisch School of the Arts at New York University. So thank you all for coming today, and please welcome Deb Willis.
Thank you, and I see my dear friend, Nora. I'd like to thank all of you for being here. It's just wonderful to see such a large crowd to look at the first 50 years of photography. Thanks to the wonderful collectors and the curator that I really acknowledge, and thank you so much, Jenny, for your vision. On this talk, we'll explore works of photographers and artists, some well-known and some not, but most of them active in the 1840s to about the 1880s. In my view, photographic images are rooted in our personal memory and are stored away for future references, such as today, as we think, as Anne described, how do we look at images today and just imagine the first time seeing them in the 1880s. This talk will address some of the images in the exhibition and also combine some historical images and my contemporary readings of the images. I hope to explore notions of artistic and political imagery, but also focus on the aspect of posing and ask questions about how these images are important to this history. These photographs empower, as well as at the same time, they give a 19th century curatorial perspective of the history. Excuse my voice, I lost it last week and it's coming back. But this talk also attempts to define autobiography through posing and through photography. It also explores relationships th- through the images that are, some are unreliable and some are reliable through my narrative reading, but also the history. Oftentimes, the power of an image also extends beyond the original purpose. And so when we think about, as we walk through and talk through these images, I want you to think about socially how these images have affected society and today historically. By placing these images within a contemporary perspective, I hope to highlight the trends and transformations, the evolution of photography through scientific, ethnographic, portrait, pornography, art, and documentation. America embraced and welcomed photography as this new medium in the 1830s. Images, to me, are powerful. We see and react to images on our streets and on newspapers and media every day. We are often affected by the display of these images, especially how we consume them without questioning what we're being told and sold. These images in this exhibition, which you'll see, are really powerful as they provoke the experience of the history of the subject. To be the keeper of the family photograph, which most of these images were held in family collections. And so we have to embrace that sense of the importance of families and how they consider their importance of family images. Also, I'd like to also consider within the talk the trappings of femininity in some of the images and also the value of photographs as we see them today. This intersection, as I mentioned earlier, you'll see that these images are captivating, and the albums that were shared, that we can look at the domestic tools, the images that we see through dress as well as through politics. This first image here is and some of the images are definitely in the exhibition, and some are images that I felt would just kind of enhance the exhibition that Jenny curated. And so this first image includes an image of a young girl. And I love the aspect that we see within this framing of this image. It completes a story. It's an ambrotype, but the exposure is about celebration. We have to think at this time in the 1860s through the 1890s, a number of children died because of the plague and other experiences. So having your child photograph is really important. But the fact that she's holding an apple, so she's the poetic notion of the apple of the eye of the family member, but also that the fact that they're hand tinting the ambrotype from jewelry to the cheeks to the apple. The aspects, as I mentioned, of photographing during this period also includes images of Native Americans. This is a daguerreotype of a Kansas chief made by John Fitzgibbon in 1853. As we think about ethnographic photography, but we can also look at this in terms of portraiture, in terms of what it meant to be a warrior during that time period, what it meant to be a hunter. So we see how activities of the families within, the women within the village, they also created jewelry from teeth and bone, from feathers. We also see this daguerreotype of an American, a Native American, with sense of dress also. We see style. We see the Western style in this photograph, but we also see that she's wearing a plaid dress. She's like the other young girl in the other image. She's wearing a pearl necklace. We see that she's holding a daguerreotype case. So we see this aspect of how images are shared among Native Americans as well as the early part of this century. So this experience of sitting in a photographic studio, I thought it was really important to also have a discussion about what it meant to be placed in a photographic studio and have to sit motionless for maybe 30 seconds, maybe 60 seconds. But there's a brace, as you see, within this frame. You see the chairs, you see the sense that it depicts a story of dread as we consider the idea of posing, but we also see that the importance of what the medium meant at that time. Also, I thought it was really important to think this is an early image of a cook, a photograph that is from the 1890s in Montana, Helena, Montana, by a black photographer by the name of J.P. Ball. So we see the importance of migration during this time. A number of Chinese were brought to America to build the railroad, to think about commerce at this time, and how America, as I mentioned earlier, was going through a transformation. This, one of the wonderful images that's in the exhibition that I was fascinated with the 18-year-old John D. Rockefeller, a daguerreotype, an ambrotype that has a sense of purpose, that, you know, we know him as the wealthiest man in history, but today I understand that he grew up in this area. But we see this is at an early age, he had a sense of purpose. We can see through his style, his pose, his bow tie and style of dress. One of the earliest images, well, it's gone now. Okay, let me go back. So, okay, the image of Frederick Douglass. We talked about it at lunch today. Some of the most populated images of men during the time was, as we know, is Abraham Lincoln. But also Frederick Douglass was photographed often by a number of daguerreotypists and unknown photographers during this time. Frederick Douglass, in terms of as a forceful figure, as we see as he posed in an early photograph from the 1850s to a photograph later in the 1860s, we see a fierceness. We see a sense of dandyism in his style. We see the sense of purpose. As we looked at the image of John D. Rockefeller, the image of a man who knew the importance of an image, that knew the brilliance, that he could also explore his brilliance in posing. We see also the aspect of, as I mentioned, dandyism, but we see also the fierceness as a supporter. We can, as we read his autobiography and we read some of his lectures, we see the fact that this is a dignified man. We see that he understood his purpose as an abolitionist and an advocate during this time for women's rights. But also in recapturing this sense of purpose, I wanted to show throughout his photographic history, and so I know that there are about 60 images that circulated at a period of time. And they actually support his voice in this moment. And I thought it was really important for me as a woman who's interested in looking at the history of African American photographers to also include this photograph by photographer Augustus Washington, who made this by John Brown. John Brown, early abolitionist, this photograph was made in the 1840s, 1846 or 47, but it depicts John Brown in Springfield, Mass, as he begins to think about his role as an abolitionist. But we can see that there's an American flag or some type of flag or banner, but he's raising his hand as he's swearing to uphold something, the rights or belief in the aspect of maybe attending a meeting, of anti-slavery meeting, but he visited an abolitionist photographer who also photographed him with the hand upheld in terms of that experience. So this portrait stands as a pledge that is known through this experience of looking at John Brown, a young John Brown. One of the other aspects of daguerreotypes that's really important is buttons and pins, the abolitionist movement during this time period, that they use buttons to wear on the lapels of men, lapel that men wore. This is a black hand and a white hand touching. So the daguerreotype was used as a popular pin as at the time. This is a close-up. It's a miniature. It also they're also resting their hand on a Bible. So again, like the John Brown image, they're swearing an oath. So this pin, it celebrates, but it also reminds, it's ornamental in terms of style and dress. But so the experiences that they were worn, but this was discovered in a flea market in the 1980s. Another image that we'll see similar to this image is an unknown daguerreotype of a woman, a young black woman holding a white child. You ask the question, who's being photographed? Why is this photograph important? But we see that it was important because it's also hand-tinted, that she's not forgotten. Her voice is not forgotten because the photographer is enhancing that image of the pink on her scarf, holding the young girl still, probably for 60 seconds. Other images that I found really, really just wonderful of this photograph that also shows, you know, an early, excuse me, photograph by John Whipple, a daguerreotype that shows the Harvard professor and also reaching for his hat. He was also president, Cornelius Conway Felton, with his hat and coat. The fact that his photograph was taken with his hat, he was also known for wearing, he grew up in poverty. His father was a carpenter. He designed furniture. But to have a chair in the photograph, the hat, the coat, so in terms of looking at the character of the person. So that's something, he was also known as an outdoorsman. So when we look at these images, we think about the aspect of autobiography and personality in this. Images of early abolitionists that were important, such as the Hutchinson family, who basically were 13 of 16 children who sang and performed during the abolitionist movement through the New Hampshire and Massachusetts and Mass. Hand-colored images and such as this red shirt, enhancing a style of men and dandyism. At the same time, an image of an enslaved woman that was taken in South Carolina, how she is seen as a specimen, as an object. We see her disrobed because we see the rest of her dress as part of this frame. So it's a disturbing image as we consider, is she a willing subject to be photographed? Or is she a scientific subject to be examined? Images such as this of a woman who lived in Baltimore. She's holding also a daguerreotype case, unknown from the McGill family. She moved later on to Liberia in the 1850s, one of the first waves of African Americans who decided to move to Africa in the 1850s, abolitionists believing that Liberia and Africa was the place to go. But imagine her family receiving this photograph once she's back when she goes to Africa, photographed by Augustus Washington, also the abolitionist, understanding her class and wealth in this framing. Also, these double case portraits showing family members, women, Matthew Brady, photo, ambrotype, that, you know, we look at style and dress. I'm not sure if the lights cannot go down, is that correct? Okay, but close up you'll see downstairs how beautiful the importance of framing. I think this is one of those wonderful images that are part of this early discussion of a portrait of a dog. He's posing, you know, to see the importance this dog was to the family member. But you see the brace around his waist, you know, to make sure that he remained still for this subject. One of these, this is a photograph of Abraham Lincoln that's in the exhibition. One of the most important men photographed during this period. People had this photograph in their homes. They created, Brady made this photograph. The range of images that included was that he felt that Brady made him a celebrity in terms of having the photograph circulated at a time. This is a photograph of Lincoln's inauguration. We see Lincoln in this hairstyle that is, that's, seen as this shocking experience. But also, this is the same, they said they cut because possibly that this image was used to create the plaster of Lincoln. We've seen him at Antietam. This is a photograph there in the grounds during the Civil War. We see him in a pin and a button as part of this campaign for for him in terms of, the cause for him. But also after his, this circulated in terms of the Freedmen's Bureau, the memorial to Abraham Lincoln, that this portrait was made from the photograph, from drawings, but also that it circulated in terms of this Emancipation Monument in, Washington, D.C. There is a portrait here of the subject that was posed as the, quote, the last fugitive slave. His name was Archer Alexander. He was captured in Missouri. And so his portrait was used with this monument for Abraham Lincoln. But the monument was used from design from the photographs. So we think about how important tintypes as the campaign badge and, also a campaign button for the for his presidential campaign. And we see again, we'll see these buttons. You also experience the size and imagine worn on coat jackets. Wonderful mourning pin after his death, but the same photograph that circulated. But also the penny, as mentioned earlier by Anne, that the sculptor, sculptor Victor Brennan, so we see the bronze plaque, we also see the pose, but with all related to the photograph. It circulated in 1909, so we see the importance of this figure, Abraham Lincoln. Then also Emancipation Day celebrations. This is in Richmond, Virginia in 1888. We see a portrait of, Lincoln. So the portrait is part of that celebration as a banner outside of a black grocery store where family members are standing outside posing for it. But I also thought it was important to think about the, car, that there was the Lincoln car was, an important car during this time, after a time period, because the in 1931 that the Lincoln was part of this movement to remember Lincoln as a celebrated figure during this time period. But also the photograph, a central voice and visualizing of Lincoln through the portrait of the $5 bill. And he, the 16th president, he appeared in 1928 on his portrait on the $5 bill. So these, following Lincoln's portrait in terms of his the circulation of his image. But also in the exhibition, we see the drawings of this banner, this poster, requesting this 100,000 reward for the three people in terms of looking for the murderers of, I'm sorry, my voice is just going. But this is like just an important moment because Alexander Gardner photographed many of these men during their lifetime. And so this is one of the posters. So in terms of when the Secret Service visited the family members, when they identified the names, they actually found photographs that they could create for the poster. And you'll see also in this exhibition this wonderful image of the Golden Gate entrance in terms of San Francisco, Carlton Watkins' photograph. Wonderful street scenes and the Bay Area. One of the aspects that I found really significant about how photography is central in terms of early photography during this moment, is this a runaway slave ad. This is a woman by the name of Dolly. She is seen, she was photographed by her owner, Louis Manicold, and it's a curious one. This is one of the first ads that I actually found that had a photograph and that said runaway. This is a curious one because he describes her as she ran away from his home in Augusta, Georgia in April 1863. Her name is Dolly. Her likeness is seen within. She's 30 years old, light complexion, hesitates somewhat when spoken to, rather good looking with a fine set of teeth. You know, never left her owner. So she was enticed off by some white man. This is what he says. He happened to see her talking to her in the street corner. I find this really an important ad because as we begin to see in the arena of slavery that this woman, Dolly, was identified as good looking by her owner. The photograph circulated on a wanted poster, $50. Dolly's the only in the Louis Manicold family plantation in South Carolina. She's the only runaway, quote, that was never found. He had five enslaved men and women leave his plantation, but they were found. Dolly was never found. And so this is a way of how photographs circulated during this time, but also a way of a public arena of expressing his desire for Dolly and also feeling that she betrayed him for a white man. So it's just an amazing story. And through images of carte de visite, you'll see images throughout of the calling card of you know that was popular during this time. And this is the same image that Dolly, type of image that Dolly was photographed on. Photographic albums were really significant. And you know, this is album that's in the case here, but also the albums that are seen as souvenirs as people travel, but also meeting famous people. And this is Sam Clemens' carte de visite album. We see him here. You know, we also know him as Mark Twain. We see this wonderful pose portrait. We see that there's a sense of transformation during his lifetime as he posed with in white hair, but always with his mustache. We see Frederick Douglass also again in this exhibition and in a carte de visite. So we see how these images circulated. Multiple images were shared and traveled throughout. I think this is just a wonderful one. As an early one, this is the first woman to appear on an official presidential ballot. I found that story just fascinating. And that in terms of her image, her name is Belva Ann Lockwood. And also during this time with circulation of history and science and medicine, that we see this is called the two-headed nightingale. They were also known as conjoined twins, Millie and Christine. There are a number of people who photographed them. Their images circulated. They were very talented young women. And so here we see how their pose, their dress, but they were also seen as freaks. So they were put on display during this time. And popular images in terms of, you see how this exhibition is organized through categories such as celebrity images. We also see this image that's well known as Buffalo Bill Cody. And we see he was an American scout, he was a showman. But what's so significant about this image here is we see him in terms of how do we present the West. We present this, imagine, you know, the cowboy, we see the saddle, we see him in terms of the style of celebrity, but also of manhood. Louisa May Alcott, the author of Little Women, and how she's posed. We see the sense of biography through the book. We see the style of dress, and as she's sitting in this contemplative mood. Also, as we know that these images traveled, and we know that the popularity of the Tom Thumb wedding, they were used in throughout the 20th century as ways of raising money in churches and organizations. But here we actually see the wedding of the couple. And here we also see that they were received by Lincoln at the White House, that they were celebrities, but they also that they produced 3,600 carts per day, and that Brady was one of the photographers that celebrated and photographed them. Also, Sojourner Truth, one of the images in this exhibition. So Sojourner Truth, she always sold, as she said, in terms of she understood the importance of photography. She says, "I sell the shadow to support the substance. The substance, not only her body, but the movement of the anti-slavery movement." So we see Sojourner Truth as a domesticated figure. She is knitting. She's wearing a cap. She has a shawl. She's well-dressed in terms of pose. There are 9 different poses by Randall Studios of Sojourner Truth. But here she's leaning on a table, flowers, but also a book. So they're celebrated as a public figure, and this image, she made a lot of money as a relationship to this. Also images that circulated in terms of raising money. It's Emancipated Slaves. This is a Kimball Studios. Was also photographed by others and recreated. We see the 4 light-skinned children that were sold these images. We also see older men and children. So these images were used to educate enslaved children after emancipation. And also this image entitled Scourge Back. And this is a photograph of a man by the name of Gordon who left, who ran away after many beatings by his owner. He was in the Mound Bayou in terms of that area where he was found by surgeons during the Civil War. And abolitionists decided to photograph him and sell the photographs devoted to the education of children, of black children, in the Gulf area. Here he's posed, and we can see the horrific aspect of slavery, but also when slave owners decided to, the Confederates decided to use this photograph also to show this is what could happen if you run away. So the photograph had a dual purpose. Initially it was used to show the horrific, the horror of slavery. But here we see the aspect of this man, Gordon, but he also was able to heal and hide his scent as he ran away by putting onion and different types of poultice on his body so that the dogs could not find him. So his image circulated with the slave ship icon. It was produced in Harper's Weekly, and so there it's known to have 100,000 carts and carte visites circulated all over the states based on this. And it was said that this tells the story in a way that even Mrs. Stowe's story can tell on the horrors of slavery. Also, image of Civil War soldiers. One of the fascinating points about this exhibition also includes black and white soldiers. We see this 55th volunteer, his name is Dupree. We see images of, as he posed in a photographer's studio, but also in uniform, a sense of pride. We also see the men who were maimed as a result of it, but also aspects of how do we think about banners. The 24th Regiment, the U.S. Colored Troops, let us be soldiers and citizens in peace. And this is something that black soldiers use to celebrate and be a part of the moment, the movement of black soldiers joining the Civil War. These are some images that are part of black soldiers in the Civil War. I'm just going to flip through a few. But also Alexander Gardner, also photographing a body that's known as a sharpshooter that was killed. There were images that also included photographs that of children. This one is entitled Children of the Battlefield, where this photograph, the letter of says that this was a man who lost three children and funds were raised for orphans of the Civil War. So images, Brady's studio of Clara Barton, who was also considered the angel of the battlefield, to a hand-colored image, to images of looking at ethnographic images, and this is entitled Races of Mankind. Images that circulated of the Mandarin and the sedan chair, to stereographs. And here we see different types of stereographs that are on display on campus, to images of Native Americans that basically celebrate, but also understanding the importance of documenting. This is the gold country in terms of people moving west to become miners, to Alexander Gardner's photograph of the Indian by the name of Red Cloud, 1872. So what happened during this time? We see the westward movement. We see the importance of photography. We see the importance of how it affected America. We also see that how photographers traveled to make the images. This is a photographer's wagon, to images that J.P. Ball's photograph of women, a young woman who is a graduate of a college moving west. This is in Helena, Montana. We see the scroll as a signifier that she's educated. We also see, in terms of cross-culturally experience, we see her dressed in a Chinese type Asian dress, to dogs. You know, we see this celebration of men moving west, black men moving west, the Masons in the community of that area. This J.P. Ball, hand-colored images that we can see the artistry of the photographer and that interest in that aspect, but also this image here of Marguerite, a former enslaved woman. Here she is hand-colored tintype, a full whole plate tintype, very unusual portrait, hands on hip in terms of identity, sense of pride, a sense of self. So this is the type of images that circulated. And then thinking about this period, we also celebrate this collection as we think that these photographs transform the visual representation of America, both through the realm of popular culture and within the private space of the family album. What is revealed is that most Americans were determined to have their photographs taken. And in some cases, it was not easy. These photographs tell a story of a collector's passion, thank you so much, to document an American experience that is often overlooked or misrepresented. Through these photographs, we see how photography shaped America. We also see through this exhibition that these are images that have been hidden from us in terms of the larger public. Numerous men and women participated in recognizing the importance of this medium. Thank you. I'd like to open up for questions. Mm-hmm. I'd like to open up for questions.
Yes.
There was one photograph of a family where three people were sleeping, and I wondered what the significance was. They were trying to stay still.
No, they weren't sleeping. They were relaxing. They were showing the close-knit. There were 13 family members, and they were basically probably tired of holding the pose. So it's probably that kind of relationship. But the letters that I read about the family, that they were close-knit family that loved to travel, loved to sing, loved to play around, and so they probably showed the close relationship of the family.
Weren't the younger people having their heads on the older people?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Bruce, for bringing so much out of the exhibition and adding pictures from your own experience that further extend this. And I think kind of what you brought out that really is important is that we often overlook aspects of culture that are underrepresented. And the survival of photographs that tell a history deserve further study. And I thank you very much personally for bringing your expertise to us to show us more about this.
Thank you. Thank you.